Your support is important to Living on Earth. Donate today by pressing the donate link on the left of this page. Every bit helps, and thanks.
It's Living on Earth. I'm Bruce Gellerman. Forgive Fred Pierce, for he has sinned. Pierce, a science journalist who covers environmental issues, does his best to be green, but sometimes he slips, and he fesses up to his environmental transgressions in his new book, Confessions of an Eco-Sinner, Tracking Down the Sources of My Stuff. In the book, Pierce travels the world, exploring the ecological and social cost of his Western European lifestyle, and we follow in his carbon footprints. Fred Pierce, welcome to Living on Earth.
Thank you very much.
Your trip was sort of a mea culpa, you know, to make amends for you know, all the stuff that clutters your life.
I didn't see it as making amends, really. I saw it as the ultimate commission, really, the ultimate journey. It gave me a license to go and look at a whole lot of things that I really wanted to look at, and all in the cause of finding where my stuff comes from, connecting me with the rest of the planet, if you like, ecologically, but also socially. I think the social issues were as important for me, finding out the people that made my stuff as much as the environmental damage that was often done in making my stuff.
And the only thing that you had that whole trip that stayed with you, well, I'm looking at it right now, is your
gold wedding ring. Yep. So the first journey was to go down a South African gold mine, which is where the gold for my ring would have come from.
I guess the gold from most of our rings come from.
I think so. For the last 40 or 50 years, most of the gold in the planet has been coming out of the South African gold mines, and most probably from one of the deepest mines that I went down in. Absolutely fascinating, because you're meeting gold miners down there who've been drilling out gold for their whole lives, and they'd never actually seen gold, you know, not even a glint, because the gold was at such a small amount in that rock. So they're drilling away at this rock in the bowels of the earth, and you know, it's really hot down there, and the air conditioning systems that you need in these mines just to keep people alive down there are extraordinary.
And the amount of water is incredible.
Yeah, when you're 4 miles down in the bowels of the earth, it's very hot, and the only way of keeping it livable is large amounts of water. The miners down there are still, you know, they're black miners in the way that they were during apartheid time, and they're paying not much more than they were paid in apartheid days. So it's tough living in that part of the world, I tell you.
So how do you feel about your ring now?
I still wear it. There's a big ecological and social footprint behind something like gold. Just the amount of rock and the social circumstances behind producing just a small amount of metal like that. It's my duty to those miners is to carry on wearing that ring, not throw it away.
One of the things that you track down is the shrimp that goes in your curry.
Yeah. That was one of the more alarming journeys that I made. I went to Bangladesh. I mean, I'm an Englishman. I eat in an Indian restaurant in England every Saturday night, pretty much. The shrimps come from Bangladesh. I track those back. And I met a guy who runs one of the ponds, one of the many ponds out there raising these shrimps. He earns about $400 a year for producing shrimps that are valued in London, in the restaurants in London, at hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. He's getting a tiny amount of the money that I pay for that. I followed the journey very carefully because it struck me as very interesting. Between the farmer that I visited and the processing port, about 10 miles, on that journey, there were 7 middlemen. It was a crazy system. It was a kind of mafia-based system. A lot of people were making money out of those shrimps. The farmer really wasn't making much at all.
You quote a woman who works at a non-governmental organization in Bangladesh working with the shrimp farmers, and she says there's no such thing as sustainable shrimp.
Yeah, and I think that's true. A lot of people, particularly in the US, actually have been campaigning to try and improve the conditions of shrimp farmers. But the problem is finding the wholesalers, finding the retailers in the rich world who are prepared to sign up for this. You know, it'll be a labelling kind of system, rather like a fair trade labelling system. Sustainable shrimp was the logo they were going to go for. Now, some parts of the retailing sector, they are getting quite keen on better labelling, fair trade labelling, environmentally friendly labelling, and some of that really does mean something. But in that trade, nobody was interested. Really bad news.
One of the places you go where a commodity is fair traded is to the foothills of Mount Kilimanjaro, where they're dealing with coffee.
Yep.
And I find you really kind of taken the fair trade to task. That is that they're not giving enough money to the farmers.
In comparison with the shrimp trade, the fair trade people working on coffee and cocoa and bananas or whatever it is are doing good. But the problem is that word, that phrase, fair trade. It's not really fair trade. It's a bit fairer, but that's about as far as I'd go.
So the day you went to the market, the fair trade people were paying about $1.46 for a pound of coffee.
That's right.
It was $1.25 ordinarily that day.
That's right.
They were paying a premium.
They were paying a premium, but the prices were still lower than coffee farmers were getting two decades ago, because the problem is the international price of coffee has gone down so much that even if you pay a premium, you pay a bit more, you're still paying prices that are way down on what they were 20 years ago. The real profits are being made elsewhere in the system among the traders and the retailers and the brands.
Fair trade could be fairer.
Fair trade could be a lot fairer. People talk in the trade about fair trade light, and a lot of fair trade is fair trade light. We need to pay more. We need to really pay more.
I want you to take me down to the Cathedral of Trash. I guess in Britain, you produce an average of 1,000 pounds of trash per person. Here in the United States, we're up to 1,800 pounds?
We produce a lot of trash. I followed what happened to my trash. I followed the cart down to the cathedral, as the locals call it, where it all gets piled on, or most of it gets piled onto a barge, which goes down to a landfill site. That's a pretty straightforward. It just gets landfill, end of story, until they run out of a landfill to put it in. Quite a lot of stuff now, though, goes for recycling. So an interesting question is, well, where does this recycling happen? Does it really happen, or, you know, people making this up? And a lot of our trash, and I would guess a lot of yours too, ends up in China. When I went to China following this route, I met a woman that they call the Queen of Trash. She currently imports into China 6 million tons of waste paper and card from North America and from Europe every year. And she turns it into the boxes that go around the electronic goods that then get shipped back to us. But she's recycling. China gets a bad rap environmentally these days. But my bet is that if any country in the world is really going to take on recycling in a big way, making sure that we use resources again and again rather than just hacking them from the rainforest and digging them up from underground, if any country is going to do that, it is China. And they've started. And the Queen of Trash is my hero in that.
You traveled 110,000 miles.
I admit it.
That's a big carbon footprint.
Yeah, it's only seven times around the world. And if you work it out in tons of carbon dioxide, it works out at 22 tons. So that's quite a lot. I don't ask for repentance. I say to anybody who's critical of that, well, was the book worth it? And I don't know. I hope it was.
Well, I must admit that I love to eat shrimp. I have a gold wedding ring. Should I feel guilty?
We shouldn't generally feel guilty, but I think we should feel that we want to reduce or change our footprint. People used to know more or less where their food came from. They used to know the factory that manufactured a lot of the things that they bought in the store. We don't know anymore. And that was the point of my journey, was to try and reconnect. I don't want to feel guilty, but I think we can, if we learn and take a little bit of time, do things a bit better and hopefully help some people out there in people working in sweatshops or in bad conditions on farms or in mines or whatever it is.
Fred Pierce, thank you very much.
Been a pleasure to be here.
Fred Pierce's new book is called Confessions of an Eco-Sinner, Tracking Down the Sources of My Stuff.